In 1944, Eva Kaur was 10 years old the day her family was forced into a cattle car destined for Auschwitz, the infamous Nazi death camp in Poland. Eva Kaur was a child of war who, as an adult, came to find her own profound moment of peace. She'll speak tonight at Congregation Shari Zedek in East Lansing. Current State's Kevin Lavery joins me now with her incredible story. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Mark. You may recall from history that Auschwitz had a notorious doctor, Joseph Mengele. He was known for his often brutal experiments with twins. Eva Kaur was one of them. She and her sister Miriam endured months of physical and mental torture, but they came out alive. I asked Eva Kaur what she remembers about her arrival at Auschwitz.
We heard a lot of Germans yelling orders outside. It was very early morning. You hardly could see anything. And then the cattle car doors opened. Thousands of people poured out of the cattle car onto a little strip of land. A lot of confusion, yelling, crying, pushing. As I was standing there, my mother grabbed my twin sister and me by the hand. And as I looked around, I realized that my two older sisters, Edith and Alice, and my father were gone. I never saw them again. We were holding on to mother for dear life. Then a Nazi was yelling in German, "Twins, twins," and he demanded from my mother to answer, "Are they twins?" And my mother didn't know what to say. She asked, "Is that good?" And the Nazi nodded yes, and my mother said yes. At that moment, another Nazi came, pulled my mother in one direction. We were pulled exactly in the opposite direction. We were crying. She was crying. And all I really remember is seeing her arms stretched out in despair. She was pulled away. Once we were processed, we were marched throughout the camp, arrived at a wooden modular horse barn, very filthy and crude. We went to the latrine, and as we entered the place, there on the filthy latrine floor, there are the scattered corpses of three children. I have never, ever seen anybody dead before, but to me it was clear that in this place people were dying. So right then and there, I made a silent pledge that I will do anything and everything within my power to make sure that Miriam and I shall not end up on the filthy latrine floor.
How did you meet Joseph Mengele, and what did he do to you and Miriam?
Joseph Mengele came in the day after we arrived. He came in with an entourage, was immaculately dressed, very proper, and he counted to see how many twins, guinea pigs, he had that day. Miriam and I would be taken three times a week, placed naked in a room with about 50 other sets of twins for about 8 hours a day. And they would measure just about every part of my body. These experiments were not dangerous, but they were unbelievably demeaning. And even in Auschwitz, I had great difficulty coping with the fact that they reduced me to the lowest form of human existence. On alternate days, on Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, we would be taken to another lab that I call the blood lab, because they would tie both of my arms, take a lot of blood from my left arm, and give me a minimum of 5 injections into my right arm. And those were the deadly ones. The content of those injections, we didn't know then, nor do I know today. After one of those injections, I became very ill with a very high fever. Both my arms and legs were swollen and painful, and I had red spots throughout my body. Next morning, Dr. Mengele came in with 4 other doctors. He never, ever examined me. He looked at my fever chart, and then he declared, laughing sarcastically, he said, "Too bad. She's so young, she has only 2 weeks to live." I knew he was right, but I refused to die. And I made a second silent pledge that I would survive and be reunited with my twin sister, Miriam.
In January of 1945, the Soviet Army finally came in and liberated Auschwitz. later, you went on to live in Israel, as many Jews did, just a couple of years after it was formally created as a political state by the United Nations.
Right.
But you had been so physically and psychologically compromised, you had lost most of your family. How did you try to create a normal life for yourself?
There is no normal life. Even in Israel, where Miriam and I were for 2 years in an agricultural school that was an orphanage for children orphaned by the war, we worked 4 hours a day. We went 4 hours to school a day, and this was the only real childhood I had after the war. When we turned 18, we were drafted into the Israeli army, and that was not a picnic either. And I was stationed in Tel Aviv. I was a sergeant major in the engineering corps, and Miriam studied and became a nurse, and so she was sent to the medical corps. And she got married in 1957 and expected her first baby in 1960, when we discovered that Miriam developed severe kidney infections that did not respond to any antibiotics. And after with the second pregnancy, the Israeli doctor studied her, and they found out that Miriam's kidneys never grew larger than the size of a 10-year-old child. So whatever they have done to her in Auschwitz, when I didn't die, Miriam was taken back to the labs and injected with something that made her very sick. And by 1987, she had to go on dialysis or have a kidney transplant. She did not want to go on dialysis. I had a simple choice. I had two kidneys and one sister. So that for me was simply, I donated one of my kidneys, and we were a perfect match. But a year after the transplant, Miriam developed cancerous polyps in her bladder. Ultimately, they tried to figure out how to treat it, and they kept asking me if you could find your files, if we could find out what was injected into your body. I did everything within my power to try to find those files. I never found out, nor do I know today, what was injected into our bodies. Miriam's cancer metastasized, and she died June 6, 1993.
We're talking with Eva Kaur. She's a survivor of the Auschwitz Nazi concentration camp, perhaps the most notorious camp in World War II. She was also a twin. She and her sister Miriam were used as human experiments by Josef Mengele, the infamous Nazi doctor at Auschwitz. How long after Auschwitz did you come to forgive your Nazi captors? How did you come to that emotional place in your life?
What has happened was nothing short of a miracle. I, at my own initiative, in 1993, a month after her death or less, I received a telephone call from a professor at Boston College, Dr. John Michalczyk, who asked me to come to Boston and lecture about Nazi medicine. And then he said to me, by the way, it would be really nice if you could bring with you a Nazi doctor. I immediately blurted up, where on earth do you think I can find one of those guys? They are not advertising in the yellow pages. Well, he said to me to think about it and maybe I come up with some idea, and I did. The last project that Miriam and I worked on together before she died, we finished it in March of 1992, was a documentary done by a German television. And then they interviewed quite a few of the Mengele twins. And in that documentary, when they sent it to me, there was a Nazi doctor from Auschwitz. His name was Hans Munch. He was not my doctor. I did not know him, but he was a friend of Mengele's. So I immediately faxed a letter to Germany telling them that Miriam died. And would they please give me his telephone number in the memory of Miriam? And they did. Armed with that information, we contacted Dr. Munch, invited him to the Boston conference, but he said he did not want to go to Boston. Instead, he was willing to meet with me at his house in Germany. I was so scared. But I was curious, why was this Nazi doctor willing to meet with me? We arrived at his house. He did not, unfortunately, didn't know anything about our experiments. He told me that Mengele always said that this was top secret, therefore he couldn't share it. But he gave me a good interview about what he did in Auschwitz, so I could take it to my Boston conference. And then out of the blues, I just blurted out the words, do you know anything about the gas chamber operation in Auschwitz? I asked the doctor. And Dr. Munch said, this is a nightmare that I live with every day of my life. And I immediately asked him to go with me to Auschwitz and sign a document, just what he told me, but I wanted it signed by the ruins of the gas chamber in the company of witnesses, and he immediately told me he would love to. I was very impressed that he was willing to do that, and I wanted to thank this Nazi doctor. What can I give this Nazi doctor? How can I thank this Nazi doctor? And lots of ideas popped into my head until 10 months later, a simple idea. How about a letter of forgiveness from me to Dr. Munch? I called my former English professor to correct my spelling. We met about 3 times. He said to me, Eva, that's very, very nice that you forgive Dr. Munch. But your problem is not with Dr. Munch. Your problem is with Dr. Mengele. And so you should really think about forgiving Mengele. I tried to debate that. She said to me, okay, when you go home tonight, pretend that you are talking to Mengele. You can call him anything in the book that comes into your mind. But ultimately, you must forgive him. And so I went home. I looked up a lot of words, nasty words, in the dictionary. I closed the bedroom door, and I pretended I was talking to Mengele. And at the end, I said, in spite of all the things that you have done, I forgive you. And I said, wow, that is an interesting feeling. I decided I might as well forgive all the perpetrators who were in Auschwitz, and anybody who has ever hurt me, because they were not as bad as Mengele. And it is important to give it a blanket forgiveness, because people who hold on to some pain and anger, they are not going to be completely liberated from it. So that is the way we arrived in Auschwitz. I came with my children. Dr. Munch came with his. Dr. Munch signed his document documenting the gas chamber. I read it and signed it. I read my own statement of forgiveness and signed it, and I immediately felt that all the pain and burden was lifted from my shoulder, that I was no longer a victim of Auschwitz, nor was I a prisoner of my tragic past. I was free of Mengele, and I was free of Auschwitz.
Eva Kaur is an Auschwitz concentration camp survivor. She's the founder of the Candles Holocaust Museum. That stands for Children of Auschwitz Nazi Deadly Lab Experiments Survivors. It's based in Terre Haute, Indiana. She'll speak about her life and work tonight at Congregation Shari Zedek in East Lansing. Eva Kaur, what an honor and privilege it is to talk with you. Thank you for sharing the story of your life, and it's inspiring to me, and I'm sure many other people as well.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.